Podcast or call with Norm Farrar, aka the Beard Guy. Sit back and enjoy your lunch or coffee. I'm going to enjoy my coffee. We have a very special guest today. If you don't know him, his name is Rich Goldstein. And Rich is a fantastic patent attorney. I had the pleasure of meeting him, well, probably about a year and a half ago, but we bumped into each other on many occasions at different events all over the world. Now it's meeting each other through different virtual summits. But anyway, sit back, relax. And if you have any questions, just type them into comments. We're going to try to get to everyone. If we don't get to them during the podcast, we promise we'll get back to, we'll make sure that the questions are answered. So Kelsey, is there anything else that I have to do?
All right. Just remember to follow us on social media. We're on pretty much everything. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter. We even just got a TikTok, so we'll be putting up some new videos there. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
We got TikTok.
Yeah. Nothing's up there yet, but.
Do I have to dance?
You should.
You do, actually. Yes. Yeah.
You and me, Rich, we'll do that. Okay. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my friend, Rich Goldstein. Rich, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Hey, Norm, how you doing? A little Good. Bit about myself. I think you pretty much covered it. I mean, I'm a patent attorney. I've been working with entrepreneurs for 26 years now. I've obtained over 2,000 patents for my clients in that time. And the last few years, I've been working heavily with e-commerce entrepreneurs, Amazon sellers. And so that's a big part of my practice these days. Yeah, that's it. And Norm, I was wondering, this is supposed to be a lunch thing. Was I supposed to bring lunch or was I supposed to bring lunch for you?
You were supposed to bring lunch for me, but it didn't show up. I'm a little disappointed.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, and I'll know better for next time.
All right, very
Hopefully
good.
Hopefully there will be a next time. Hopefully I'll get another invitation after I mess that up.
Well, you know what really sucks is that I couldn't get Coke Zero. I had to get Diet Pepsi. So Everybody who knows me, I am a Coke Zero-aholic. Okay.
Well, lately I've been into this bubbly stuff. It's
I've tried that.
It's surprisingly flavorful for seltzer. So that's not there. Tagline. That's my thought about it.
See the gold nuggets you're already picking up.
So yep. Exactly. And I mean, hanging around with you, I mean, I learn all of these things about how to do public relations, how to get my message out there. And now I'm just doing it for things that I don't even own, for someone else's company.
Yeah, it's called placement, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't have I can't leave it in the camera view for some product placement and get paid for it. So
there you go.
Next time.
All right. So Rich, let's start off with the first question. Why should people care about trademarks and patents?
Good question. Why should they care? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why a patent or trademark could be helpful to you. There's a lot of perceptions of why it could be helpful to you. And it kind of depends on the business. I mean, I'll just tackle a couple of them. One is when it's time to sell your business, owning the IP can actually multiply the value that you would get for selling your business. Because when you're selling your business, you're selling it based upon what you've been able to achieve, the little bit of market share that you've been able to achieve, and the customers that you've been able to reach, the revenue level you've been able to reach. Because when someone's buying your business and there's no IP, they're looking at it like, well, okay, we can buy your business for X amount, but how much would it cost us if we wanted to just create a business like it in parallel that had the same level of sales and et cetera? And so they're always judging it against like, well, what would it cost for us to recreate this? But when you do have IP, then they can't just create a business in parallel just like yours. And then now they're not just looking at the little bit of market share that you've achieved, they're looking at the whole rest of the pie, the other 90%, and you can call that the upside. That's the possibility that they buy when they're buying your business, is the possibility of the whole rest of the market share by owning the rights to be the one who can make this product. So that's one good reason, is it can become a multiplier of the value you receive or what you get paid when you go to exit. Another good reason to care about this is that lately Amazon has been deferring to IP owners. Listings get shut down all the time because someone owns the IP. And it could be you, it could be them. And I would say it pays for you to be the one that owns the IP that then is on the right side of Amazon's favor, or the one whose side Amazon takes. So I think that those are a couple of good reasons, especially in e-commerce, to protect your products and brands. It doesn't always make sense though, especially on the patent side. You're not necessarily always going to get a valuable patent, so it might not be worth doing. But trademarks almost always pays to protect your brands. Relatively inexpensive to do a trademark. When you have a registered trademark, you also can get into brand registry on Amazon. So protecting your brands is a no-brainer. You should care about that always. Protecting your products, sometimes. Depends on whether you have something that's really new enough to get a strong patent.
Yeah, I mean, if you're serious on growing your brand on Amazon, you've absolutely got to get a trademark.
Absolutely.
So is there a specific... So we're going to go back and forth with trademarks and patents, but are there any specific or common mistakes that you see that a lot of Amazon sellers make?
Well, I think probably when it comes to the branding, when it comes to the trademark, one of the most common mistakes that they make is picking a name that's just generic or descriptive. So, you know, like if you're selling supplements, you call it supplement store. And you just can't protect a name like that. Something that's directly describing what you're doing is not protectable. You know, if you wanted to call it Hercules Supplement Store, then that's something that's maybe, it's not directly descriptive of it. People think of Hercules, they think of a big, strong guy. That might be a good name, and that's something that could be protectable. I mean, that's assuming that it's not already being used in the realm of supplements. You always want to search and find out if you're conflicting with other marks. But probably the biggest mistake that sellers make is picking something that's just too descriptive, and there's no hope of getting it trademarked.
Right. And you're talking to a guy that owned supplements.club.
It's a good domain name, right?
Yeah, it's a great domain name, but I couldn't get it trademarked.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, and live and learn. And, you still can have a successful business in that, but it always helps when you can get a trademark. So if you're starting from the beginning, then you should think in terms of something which is not directly descriptive.
You could even do, and I know I've talked to you about this, but I could have put normssupplement.club, and that would have been probably enough, specific enough that I could get a trademark on it, correct?
Yes, exactly. And there may be some hope for Supplement Club too. And we can talk about that at another time.
Very good. Now, the different types of trademarks, and does Amazon accept a specific trademark, or can it be any word mark, or what are the different trademarks?
In general, there are trademarks that protect just a phrase, which you can call a word mark. There are other trademarks that protect the logo that you're using, which are often called the design mark, and sometimes there are hybrid marks which include the name and the design. Generally, the best bet is to get the word mark. Amazon is so wishy-washy with their policies on stuff that I can't tell you for sure what they would do. And I've heard, if you asked me a year ago, I would have told you that you need the word mark to get brand registry on Amazon.
Right.
And then more recently, I've heard from people that they were able to get brand registry with a combined mark, with a hybrid word plus design mark. And, you know, I don't know if that's true. It's not really the right result. I mean, Amazon doesn't always do things that make sense. You know, similar thing is when people talk about getting brand registry in the US by filing a European mark. That shouldn't be the case. I've heard people have been able to do that. It shouldn't be the case because trademarks are territorial. Someone having the trademark in Europe shouldn't give them the rights in the US. But Amazon does weird things and they make their own rules. But if you want to do it right and in a way that's protectable or most protectable, first, you want to protect it in the place where you're selling, like in the United States. And then also, when it comes to word mark versus design mark, you want to protect the phrase because you want to protect it independently of what type of logo they use or what type of style text is used. And the way to do that is with a word mark. So that's usually your primary mark that you want to file.
Okay. And would you recommend, a lot of companies use a tagline. Would you recommend getting the tagline done separately?
Tagline, you mean like a slogan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, typically you would want to do that separately. You don't want to combine it all in one because then you have an issue with enforcement when someone uses the tagline, but they don't use the main mark, or they use the main mark and not the tagline. So yeah, I mean, if you have an effective tagline, you can get a trademark on that. So examples are things like Just Do It for Nike, or The Real Thing for Coca-Cola. Like those slogans, those taglines are trademarks.
So if I'm new to Amazon and I go and I find a name, name's good, I get a logo, what are the next steps in putting together a trademark?
Well, I mean, in general, the information that we need to apply for it, I mean, of course, you need to know what the mark is. You need to know the who the owner is, whether that's you or a corporation. You also need to know what the date of first use is, what the date that you first put the product out there. And then beyond that, the most important thing is describing the type of products and services that you're offering under this mark. I mean, a lot of times people say, well, I want to use Hercules, for, I don't know, lots of things. And I tell them we need to narrow it down. The trademark office wants to know specifically what type of product that you're selling. If it's supplements, it'll be in one category. If it's shampoo, it would be in a different category. We need to specify the goods and services that are being used. And there's a little bit of latitude in some areas, like, a certain type of, hand cream and skin cream, moisturizing cream, can be in the same category. But sometimes the trademark office is kind of strange about how they divide the category. So for example, if you're selling chairs, wood chairs and metal chairs are different categories, totally different classes, have to pay new filing fee if you want to do metal chairs versus wood chairs. So, I mean, when you go to do the trademark application, you need to find out kind of what category it fits, and that's part of what you need to have ready for filing the trademark application.
Yeah, a lot of Amazon sellers that I talk to, they've done it on their own. They want to save a few hundred bucks. And I always tell them that it's always best. There's the right time and a wrong time to spend money. This is one of those times that you want to make sure you spend money. And it's really not a lot of money to spend if you're going to grow out this brand. But those specific things that you were talking about, making sure that it's done properly at the end. I mean, if you don't fill out the application right, and if you don't have that skill set, it could cause you a lot of problems. So, just going to an attorney that specializes like you, I think it's so important. And most Amazon sellers, a lot of Amazon sellers think that, oh, I'll just go and file this on my own. I'll go to LegalZoom and boom, send in the patent, and they have no idea, or the trademark, and they have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with trademarks, and I think maybe what has people kind of want to do it on their own is that they see, okay, the application, I mean, it's not the simplest in the world, but it's, if you've done it a few times and you're familiar with it, it looks pretty simple. I mean, literally takes about 15 minutes to do a trademark application. But the thing with trademark law is that it's highly nuanced, where, you know, it could look like you should do it a certain way. But if you have experience with other applications and similar situations that have been rejected, then you know that you should steer the ship just a few degrees to the right. Right. And that could make all the difference. So, you know, trademarks is something that really seems simple on the surface. But a lot of times what you gain by working with someone who has the experience of having done lots of trademark applications, it can make the difference between whether it's successful or not. Just a little nuanced change. And also, a lot of times those nuances will tell you whether you are going to be able to get it through or whether you're going to have a problem. And, you know, if you're launching a product, I think it always pays to know that you're going to have a problem now rather than, you know, 6-8 months from now when the trademark gets rejected and you realize I'm going to have to rebrand. I'm going to have to relabel, repackage all my products and change everything around because I can't use this brand name. So considering what you're investing in your product, I agree with you, Norm. It makes sense to do it the right way. And I mean, when I do a trademark, we charge $1,000 plus the government fee. You know, there are
that's pennies. That's an that's really an insurance policy, you know, to make sure that you're covered.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll just tell you that there are attorneys that charge more. There are you go to LegalZoom, I think they charge you a few $100. You know, is it worth saving the money to, you know, I mean, I like to think of it as, you know, like I said, steering a little bit one way or another. It's like when you're at port and you're about to leave port, 1 or 2 degrees steering the ship doesn't seem like much of a difference. But once you get 100 miles out to sea, it could be a big difference. So I like the opportunity to really steer the ship in the beginning. Sometimes it doesn't take too much effort to make a big difference later on.
And once you get your trademark, it's up to you to police it, right? Nobody's going to protect it. You've got to actually go out there. And if you see somebody using your trademark or using something similar, what do you do?
That's, you're absolutely right that you have to police it. There is no trademark police. I mean, if it was actually counterfeit goods, like on the level of like a Gucci bag being copied, then the FBI can get involved, you know, but, you know, just like pirated videos. But in general, as a practical matter, you've got to be the one to police your mark. And it's important to police your mark because if you don't, you run the risk of losing it. So there are countless cases of people who had a mark, and then a competitor opened up with a very similar name and the company did nothing about it. And then another competitor opened up and another one did. And so basically what happened is you allowed your trademark to get diluted, where people aren't thinking of the trademark as coming from you. They're not thinking of that name as you. They think like, oh yeah, there's another Ray's Pizza over there. And so you lose the right to enforce it because you can't show that this one person is confusing the public. If there are three others also with a similar name, it's very important to maintain that distinctiveness for your trademark. And you do that by policing it, by making sure that if someone is legitimately infringing, you have to go after them and get them to stop.
Right. And it's got to be, again, it just depends on your description, but if somebody's got a trademark and it's about making gnomes, and then they come out with making fertilizer, you've got to open up, you've got to re-register a different class, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And that happens all the time. I mean, so for example, Harley Davidson has tons of trademarks. Of course, I'm sure their first trademark was for motorcycles. And then probably for clothing. And then someone says, hey, let's sell Harley Davidson toothbrushes. So they file a trademark application in the toothbrush class for Harley Davidson. And same thing with Coca-Cola and all the other famous brands. They typically have hundreds of trademarks, and they often pertain to whatever the latest product is that they're selling now.
So if there's any one thing that you can tell people about trademarks, is there something that you can let them know? We're going to switch over to patents now.
I would say, let's see, anything else about trademarks? I think we mostly covered it. And, perfect. You know, I'll just say one last thing. It's all based on likelihood of confusion. So it's all based upon whether you would be confusingly similar to another person's mark. That's what, if it's not, then you can possibly register your mark. If you are confusing someone, then you're not going to get the trademark registered, and you could be liable for trademark infringement. So the main thing to think when you think trademarks is likelihood of confusion. That's really the governing principle of all of it.
Fantastic. Now the fun part. Well,
fun for you or fun for me?
Oh, I think it's fun for you. Patents. Yeah.
Yes, patents is my jam.
So tell us in 15 minutes or so, everything about patents.
Right. Okay. So first of all, let's dispel some myths. So one of the biggest myths, and this can go one of two ways, right? Is you'll have some people saying that patents are incredibly important. Patents are incredibly valuable. You need to patent your product, right? But there are other people that will say, nah, basically patents suck. Patents aren't worthwhile. If you get a patent, then someone can just make a little change and get around your patent. So don't bother with patents. And the truth is that both of those are true at different times. Sometimes a patent is valuable and strong. Sometimes a patent is weak and has very little value. And the thing that controls that is how different the product was when you patented it. And of course, it's got to be written correctly and done well to embrace what was new about it. But probably the biggest mistake that people make when they're thinking about patents or when they're looking to patent something is not understanding how new the thing actually was. Because you can get a patent that's as broad or that covers as much ground as is possible by whatever existed before. But if lots of things like it existed previously, then you could get a patent. And it's, you know, it looks the same, you know, as every other patent. You're like, I got my patent, but it could be very much focused on the details. It could just be about the minutiae of what actually is different about yours. So that's, I think, the most important thing to understand about patents is that every patent has a scope. And it's related to how new it was at the time.
And having a patent is going to add value when you go to sell your business at the same time, right?
Yes, absolutely. But the value that it has is going to be, well, does this patent actually prevent people from making products like mine? Or is this patent only about a specific aspect of it, which the competitors don't care if they're doing the same thing or not. So, you know, if it's possible, I apologize for the noise in the background. That's the value of having a good mic. I literally have a leaf blower probably 20 feet behind me, and you didn't hear it, so I love that.
I just thought it was your stomach.
Yeah, well, it could be, but you know, I'll take care of that after we're done talking about patents. As far as the value to your business. So when you go to sell the business, if the patent actually prevents other people from making a product like it, then yeah, that patent's going to add tremendous value to your business. But if the patent was just really about the details and when it turns out, your competitors could make a product that's just as competitive that customers will want by leaving out a few of the things about your product, then it doesn't have much value. So that's the thing you want to consider, is what details would the patent be stuck in? And that's going to make all the difference in whether you could enforce it while you own your business and whether it's going to have value when you go to sell your business. Do you want me to give you an example, or is that clear?
Yeah, give us an example.
Okay, so you know, you're out shoveling snow and you say, hey, wouldn't it be great to have a heated shovel so it doesn't ice up? So you go to patent your heated shovel, and maybe you don't look really closely at what existed before, but your patent attorney tells you, oh yeah, I could get you a patent on your heated shovel, but it's because you also had a heating coil along the front edge of the shovel. You had a timer built in. Let's say a sensor, a motion sensor, so that if it was left in one position for more than 5 minutes, that it automatically shut off, right? Your patent attorney is able to get you a patent based on those details. But it turns out that heated shovels, you can go back to the 1920s and see people were thinking about heated shovels, right? So you don't have a patent on the idea of the heated shovel. So now the question is, if someone's going to see your product on the market and wanna to sell heated shovels, are you going to be able to stop them? And then it's going to be a matter of like, well, do they also have that heating coil along the front edge? Do they also have that motion sensor that has the automatic shut off feature? If they don't, they wouldn't be infringing this patent. So then now, is it necessary for them to do that? I mean, could they be competitive by leaving out those features? Or are these the things that your customer is looking for? Is your customer's insisting on it having those features? Then it's still a valuable patent. But if customers don't really care about that built-in timer that you've patented, then there's not so much value in your patent. And that's the situation a lot of people find themselves in. They think they patented the heated shovel, but as it turns out, it wasn't as new as they thought it was, so they're patenting the details.
Got it. Yeah, I think that makes it perfectly clear. So what are the types of patents that people can use?
Well, I mean, there's utility patent, which is most generally what you think of when you're thinking of an invention. Like you think of someone in their garage coming up with an improvement for a product, like it functions better. It's that, you know, it's a shovel that they've added a heater to or something like that. Something that's structurally different for a functional purpose. That's a utility patent. So most typically what you think of when you think of someone inventing something. There's also design patent, which is just about the shape of the product. It's just about what they call the ornamental appearance. So just about the design, like the design of that microphone in front of you, that could be a design patent. And it's just for preventing people from making a product that looks substantially similar. Now, you know, through most of my career, people would say, yeah, design patents, not so important, not so valuable, mainly because if it's just about the appearance and then your competitor changes the appearance, they're gonna get around the design patent. But lately on Amazon, design patents have become extra important. Two reasons. Number one is when people knock you off on Amazon, they don't just look at your product as inspiration and say, okay, great, well, let me make my own version of this that's even better. They just knock it off. They just copy it exactly. And so if you have a design patent for the appearance of the product and they make a product that looks just like yours, it's going to infringe the design patent. So that's one. And the other thing is that Amazon more readily shuts down other sellers from a design patent than from a utility. And the reason is that utility patents are complicated. And infringing a utility patent is all about wording and whether it fits the definition of the invention as it's defined in the patent. That's hard for Amazon to figure out if they receive an IP complaint. But if they receive an IP complaint based upon a design patent, which is just about the appearance, they're going to look at the pictures. They look at the picture of the competing product. They'll look at the drawings from your patent. And they'll say, looks pretty close. Let's shut them down. So design patents have become very helpful, very useful tool when you're on Amazon to prevent knockoffs.
Yeah, and right now I'm going through this with two of our clients, but you're guilty until proven innocent. They click you, suspend your listing, and you've got to prove it. And even if there are a lot of false claims that are out there, but you still get your account suspended or the listing suspended until you can prove that you own that patent.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And even worse than that is like, so then they put you in a position where you need to prove it, but then they don't listen. But then but then there's no one to actually hear those arguments about why you're not infringing. You know, you get a form, you put together a well thought out argument about why you can't possibly infringe this patent. And you get back a form letter that says something like, to properly respond to an IP complaint, you must get copies of invoices that show that you are legitimately purchasing this product from the seller or a license agreement. And like, no, that's not the point. It's like, I'm not infringing, but often at Amazon, you know, there's no one minding the store, you know, no pun intended. I mean, they're not paying attention to reasonable arguments or fairness. So again, like what I said before, it pays to be the IP owner. It pays to be the person who has the IP, because you know they are shooting first and then barely asking questions later.
So I don't know if you can touch on this, but let's say you are the IP owner and somebody puts in a false claim, your listing gets shut down. Other than following those instructions, which usually come back with a form letter from somebody or just a form email, is there something that the sellers can do to help get Amazon's attention, other than showing that you're the IP owner? Is there anything that they can put in the email, or do you know of any tricks that could help anybody listening?
I don't know any tricks specifically to get Amazon's attention, but one thing that you can do when there's a false complaint is you can sue, and you could threaten to sue, and those get the attention of the complainant. So, it's not many people actually follow through and do that. But I've along with my litigator colleagues, like we've been in that situation where we've had people falsely claim infringement and shut down our client. And then we've gotten them to pay us tens of thousands of dollars, because they recognize, they made a mistake. They damaged our business through their false claim. So you can sue. It's a more extreme measure that you can take. One thing you should always know, though, that most people don't realize about threatening to sue, is when you threaten someone to sue, you could end up in a lawsuit. Depending on it differs according to the state of the jurisdiction, state law versus federal law, but general principle, in many places there's what's called declaratory judgment action, which means I'm saying Norm, you're infringing my patent, I'm going to sue you, you're infringing my patent. Well, you've got the right to take me to court to clarify this issue and not let me just hold it over your head that I might sue you someday. So you've got the right to do a declaratory judgment action to clarify that you're not infringing my patent, to get the court to declare that. So keep in mind, people are always like, let's send a cease and desist letter. Then how much is the letter going to cost? Oh, maybe $1,000. Okay, that's worth it. But yeah, that could rope you into a $50,000 lawsuit. So you always have to be aware that if you're sending a threatening letter, you could end up getting sued.
And I think that a lot of people, they send them out like they're nothing. They don't understand that, if somebody, some savvy business guy or lady can turn that around on you and cause you a lot of grief. You just don't send out these cease and desist orders just, like candy.
Right.
Yeah. So a good point. And I guess the other thing I'd be interested in is the cost. So between the two, is there any sort of average cost that you can give?
Yeah, I mean, generally, I would say utility patent is going to be north of $10,000. Design patent, a few thousand. Trademarks, probably a couple thousand, soup to nuts. So, you know, trademarks, least expensive, design right. patents a bit more, utility, quite a bit more, like you know, at least a few times more than what a design patent would cost.
And one of the things that I would do, like for the design patent anyways, is, or even the other, but just the design side, you talk to your manufacturers. And if somebody's, you know, making, you know, Norm the Gnomes, what can they do differently? And, you know, try to get that design patent because, you know, it does come in, it is very helpful. And you'll stop the predators coming. And well, at least if you police it, you can put in an infringement claim. But it's so helpful if you just talk to your manufacturer to see what they can do. Look at the Amazon's listings, do some competitive analysis and see how you can change it. I know our buddy, Kevin King, yes. he always talks about, you know, the products that he's launched and all he does is just make them that much better. So people will buy them. And it's not only will you get a really great looking product, it's different. And, you know, people will probably take a look. I mean, if it's a really crappy adjustment, I don't know what people will do, but if it works, I mean, that could be a real big benefit to sales on Amazon, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it pays to look at all those ways to differentiate.
So I know like to understand patents and trademarks in a half hour is pretty good. You did a great job, by the way.
Thank you. I've been practicing.
Hey, Kels, is there any questions before?
Yeah, no questions. Danny McMillan just said that you have a very nice setup.
Oh, coming from Danny, thank you.
Yeah, that is quite a compliment from Danny.
So I guess, you know, we can wind it up. And what I'd like to be able to do is, I know you are an author of a patent book. You want to just let people know how they can get that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is the American Bar Association's Consumer Guide to Obtaining a Patent. It's basically... it explains in plain English how patents work. Kind of the way I've been explaining this is the way the book is written, just down to earth, I'd like to think. So it's available on Amazon. It's the ABA Consumer Guide to Obtaining a Patent by Rich Goldstein. Pretty easy to find. Norm, I also have a podcast that you've been on and I appreciate. Mm-hmm. And that's it's called Innovations and Breakthroughs, where I feature top leaders in the path they took to create change. You know, and I would just say that if you want to find out more about patents and the patent process, you could also go to my website, which is goldsteinpatentlaw.com. You could learn more about the process. You could connect with my staff and see if it's a match to work together. And that's really it.
Well, I know, I was able to grab that book and I took a look at it and it's so easy to understand. It's not legalese, it's layman's terms. So it's really laid out quite nice. I highly recommend it if you want to get more information about patents. It's the book to get. So anyways, sir, we're at the end of lunch. I'm sorry that you didn't bring any lunch or yeah, get any for me.
Well, but... I actually do have my lunch here, but yeah, I was gonna say like, it's the end of lunch and I'm starving.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. And so if there are any questions that come in, we'll make sure that we answer them. And again, Kelsey, what do we do?
Follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. Just search Norm Farrar. And also we have the new podcast, I Know This Guy. So we also have a Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram page for that. So there's lots of Norm Farrar content out in the world now.
And I should say that the I Know This Guy podcast has nothing to do with Amazon at all. It's just interesting people. Their ups, their downs, and everything in between. So if you're interested in listening to a little bit different of approach to what I do, check it out. And let's see. So appreciate you tuning in today. And next Thursday, we'll have another guest. Actually, I think it's going to be Kevin King. And look forward to seeing everybody. So have a great day. And thank you for listening. Lunch with the